Welcome into a fifth and final edition this week of Locked On Knicks. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf, once again, he's been in 60% of our episodes this week. Unheralded production, unprecedented production from Jake Rosen. And this, Alex, might just be the most exciting episode. We're getting into Mitchell Robinson, and then a little bit, finally, we keep talking about it as like this crazy abstract thing. The 2021 draft is so great. And for people who don't really, really keep up with this stuff, I'm sure a lot of people are asking, why? Who are the guys? What do I have to look forward to? And we get into all of that with Jake.
Yeah, and I don't know if people listening are necessarily going to like the take on Mitchell Robinson, but you know, Jake's a pretty smart dude, and he's got a really interesting way of looking at how NBA players work and can be valuable, particularly in high-pressure situations like the playoffs. And he's got some really interesting takes on Mitch. And then we talk about Cade Cunningham, the crown jewel of the 2021 draft, who to hear Jake talk about is maybe one of the best players he's ever seen. Granted, he's 18, but he's watched a lot of high school hoops and has seen Cade in person and gushes about him. And then we get into some of the other guys in the top 10-ish of the 2021 draft and finish off on an interesting question about where some of the top guys in this draft might slot into next year's draft, just to kind of put in perspective just how good next year's class is. So that's all coming up next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts with a five. Ewing for the win. Yes.
Up and cuts left. Now fires a three.
And he's good. And he's fouled. And he's fouled.
Anthony for three.
Yeah, to me, I mean, I think Alex and I are both slightly, if not vehemently, against the idea of acquiring Chris Paul. But one of the more appealing aspects of that is to see Frank play off of a great point guard. And I think that would completely change the outlook of his game. And to your point, the idea of him becoming even a league average 3-point shooter would just give him a real chance to have success as sort of a secondary attacker. And the added advantage, like, I mean, even if you're an average 3-point shooter, if you have like an incredible primary and Chris Paul, like maybe a notch below that at this point, but last year for Oklahoma City, still an incredible primary guy during the regular season. If he could create that kind of advantage for Frank, and Frank just ticks the 3-point shooting up a little bit, all of a sudden you have an effective offensive player, and then a guy defensively, there are no questions about him. Like he can get it all done. And I think he certainly showed a bit more juice off the dribble in year three. And for someone, I mean, and Alex is in the same camp as me, and most of our listeners are in the same camp, as someone who loves Frank, that was really encouraging, because you start to see the outline of someone who could have the right success or who could have really good success on the right team. And you're just sort of like hoping and praying like the Knicks see that too, and they don't trade him before that becomes a possibility. But Jake, Alex inspired me. I want to circle back to another Nick, Mitchell Robinson. And I'm curious about this because I noticed that, and I think to your point in terms of where the game is going, this was smart, but most of your scouting pillars don't really seem to focus on big men. They seem to be mostly about perimeter wings and if not guards. And to me, Mitchell Robinson is intriguing as a playoff guy, because we've seen in the regular season, he has the ability to switch onto some of the best scorers in the league and with varying degrees of success. Like occasionally he gets torched like any big guy does, but occasionally stifles those guys. And like he's the person who's like blocked like multiple James Harden like step back threes that seem utterly unblockable. And he's the type of guy who is an elite rim protector and simultaneously shows the ability on switches to slide his feet and hold his own. And you can question like, all right, is that a great regular season thing? Does that hold up in the playoffs when he's getting put in the blender over and over and over again? And we've seen, and to be clear, this is a guy who's considered in another tier than Mitch, mostly because of what he does offensively. But we've seen Bam Adebayo and what he can do defensively in the playoffs. And as like one of the few bigs, like you hear all these guys like throughout the regular season, great defender, great defender. another great defender. But year after year, and like Clint Capela is the guy I think of in that category, that guy is getting played off the floor against the Golden State Warriors. Bam doesn't have to go against the prime Golden State Warriors, but I think from what we've seen from him in these playoffs, he's someone who can hold up in those situations. And he has so much value in that he can take advantage of a smaller team offensively and not being taken advantage of defensively, if I were to sum it up. And I guess that's a long-winded way of asking you, do you think Mitchell Robinson is in the Clint Capela tier of defenders, or do you think he's in the Bam Adebayo tier of defenders?
I mean, so first of all, like my pillars are, yes, that's, I mean, it's an accurate and like, it's a good observation because I don't value big men that much. Onyeka Okongwu is different to me because I think he just brings an incredible combination of skill, physicality, and smarts that like can 100% be built on to achieve somewhat of a Bam Adebayo role. And in a class like this, I'm willing to take that. But ideally, like the Knicks got Mitchell Robinson in the second round, and we're talking about him as someone who could play in the playoffs. Like, cool, that's great. Are you going to find a wing in the second round who can initiate your offense? Probably not. So like the idea of like using, I just think using like high-end draft capital on a rim-running big man when you can get someone like Mitchell Robinson in the second round or other people in free agency for cheap contracts, like I think that's a little bit irresponsible. To me, the people that really move the needle are intelligent big men. And that's what you're seeing Bam Adebayo. That's why he's as good as he is right now. This combination of one, being a physical specimen, and two, being one of the smartest players on the court at all times. And with Mitch, I worry a little bit that, like, with the processing speed with him. Like, the playoffs move extremely fast and everything is happening for a reason. And because of that, as a defender and especially as a big man, you need to be on it and you need to be aware of what's happening. You need to be aware of why it's happening and you need to know where you need to be because of everything that's going on. And I'm not 100% there yet to be fully confident in him to play that role to an effective level. Do I think he can get there? Yes, I think it's possible. Am I willing to bank on it? I don't know. You know, it's like, Knicks fans might not like me because I'm pretty much coming off as lower than consensus on every one of our quote unquote young core. But like, in my opinion, we don't really have a young core. And if we did, we would be doing a little bit better than we've been doing for the past 5 years. So to me, Mitch is a valuable big man, but I'm not ready to say he's someone that can move the needle in the playoffs like Bam has done.
Just a reminder, today's episode is brought to you by Built Go. Yes, Built Go, not Built Bars, Built Go. This is a new product from the makers of Built Bar, and it helps you break through your wall, whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Built Go every day. Built Go is easy to take in 1.5 ounce packages. You can put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever, your golf bag to power through the back nine, or just put it in your pocket to get through the day, you know? Certainly know the days are harder to get through these days sometimes. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's like 5 hour energy without that same crash feeling. Plus, it's all natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking a Monster energy drink with a third of the caffeine, but better results because of what they put in it for you. It comes in 3 delicious flavors, and I have tried all of them, and I can attest they are all delicious. Peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. So how does Built Go work so well? It combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into your system fast. Plus, it's easy on the stomach. Built Go is loaded with good stuff to ignite your work. Beta alkaline, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. And Built Go then kicks to keep you going strong with vitamins B6 and B12. 10,000% of it, of your daily values, to really get you going. The collagen also promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. So it literally makes you look better in addition to making you feel better and giving you more energy to get through your workout or even just your day, presentation, Zoom call, your walk outside, whatever it is you need energy for. Built Go has you covered. So if you want to try Built Go, visit builtgo.com and use promo code LOCKED and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. This is a pretty simple question, too, to sort of piggyback on that. I mean, there's been a pretty big debate raging about Mitch and his next contract, which is coming up as soon as next summer. Where do you stand as far as that's concerned? As far as, I mean, I think that his price point is probably going to be set somewhere at minimum around $15 million a year. Like, how do you feel about him as a player that would make that much, considering what he offers on both ends of the ball?
I mean, look, I think there has to be a lot of projection going on with Mitch. He missed an entire year of live basketball reps, which can be detrimental in terms of the mental aspect of processing speed, like we talked about. So he's still kind of, in a sense, working his way back into the swing of things. I don't know. $15 million is probably a good number. Anything more than that, I'm probably against that, just because I don't think that that's ideal for team building. And I'm in the camp right now that our books do not matter whatsoever. I think we should sign Fred VanVleet to a good contract, because I think that would be best for whoever we draft right now. He's incredibly scalable. He can play on or off the ball. He can score at all three levels. He can pass. I can contribute to winning, as corny as that sounds, but it's true, because he can do all those things. I'm in on that, because for the next 3 to 4 years, our books don't matter, because we're focusing on developing skill guys under rookie skill contracts. Now we're talking about the next 6 years, the next 7 years, because Mitch's extension, it's coming up in, it'll kick in 2 years, and then it's going to be a 4-year deal. Like, now we're talking about a timeline where ideally we would be competitive. And are you really being competitive paying Mitchell Robinson $18 million a year? I have a hard time believing that.
All right. We're going to finish up talking about some 2021 prospects, but the last pillar here, we've touched on it tangentially a couple of times, but it's draft smart players. And I'm curious who in your mind fits that stereotype in this draft, because I would say after we've had on like a bunch of different draft experts, we've talked through all these guys, I've watched a little bit of film here and there, and my favorite person out of everyone in this draft is Devin Vassell. And to me, he's the epitome of the draft smart players philosophy on both ends of the floor, but particularly defensively, just having like an anticipatory sense in terms of his help defense and where the ball is going and what to do and the right ways to cordon off players and the right way to like play help defense is almost, I mean, I kind of think like he's obviously like not anywhere near the all-time freak that Giannis is athletically, but he's so smart. He's kind of a freak in his own way in terms of help defense and in terms of like almost playing free safety. And instead of just being an athlete who's so big, long, and quick that they can get to any ball, he sees things so much faster than anyone else on the defensive end of the floor. He can get there anyways. And I mean, if I'm the Knicks, I'm just looking up to pile as many of those guys up as possible, because I think in RJ and Frank, they already probably have two of them. But I'm curious to your thoughts on who the guys are that fit into that archetype, because to me, the one thing I really do like about this draft is I actually think it is pretty rich on those types of players.
Yeah, I want to focus on two guys, and I picked these two because like they're kind of in different spots on the Knicks draft range. I want to talk about Denny Avdia and Xavier Tillman, and I don't think we're going to be able to get Denny. I think he'll be gone before 8. But the thing with Denny is people have soured on him because they kind of feel he's this jack of all trades but master of none. And my argument to that is, okay, fine, I get it. Does he really have one bankable skill? Not really. The shooting's a little bit of a question. He might be undersized to be a secondary rim protector. He might have short arms. Yes, all these things are true. But he is an incredibly smart basketball player. And in my opinion, on the court, when I'm watching the film, that makes every single aspect of his game that much better. That makes him a better cutter, that makes him a better relocator, that makes him a better secondary rim protector, that where I feel comfortable banking on it, even though he might be quote-unquote undersized, he sees things a split second before everyone else, and that split second is enough time to get there and wall up and make the great play. Like, so with Denny, I'm just talking about his IQ and being incredibly smart on both ends of the ball as a pack. And I think it bodes well for him as a passer too. He's really good passing on the move, which is pretty rare for guys who are 6'8". And just that his IQ elevating every single little part of his game to make him a player that I think is worthwhile drafting. And that's become somewhat of a bold statement to some, but I'm still in the camp because I trust him in that aspect. And I trust that each little part of his game is going to become cohesive because it's all tied together from his IQ. And then the next thing I want to talk about is Xavier Tillman. And it doesn't really make a ton of sense to take another big man who I think is going to be a center in the NBA with a first round pick when we have Mitchell Robinson. But I absolutely love Xavier Tillman so much. And again, we're talking about someone who's quote unquote undersized, but if you look at the people who succeeded playing small ball, like when the Houston Rockets, like PJ Tucker, yes, you shouldn't be playing him as your center for 48 minutes of the game. That's not realistic. But can PJ Tucker be a small ball five in spurts? In my opinion, absolutely he can. And the reason for that is because you have this combination of functional strength and incredible basketball IQ. And when you look at Xavier Tillman, he checks both of those boxes with flying colors. And it's on both ends of the ball. On defense, his rotations are literally flawless and his verticality is always there. He's always making the right play. I think there was a stat that like teams shot like 10% worse at the rim. I don't quote me on that, but it was something wild and mind-boggling going up against him than they did throughout the rest of the season, which is crazy considering he's a 6'9 center. But that's because he's so smart, he's strong, he walls up, and he's always in the right spot at the right time. And then offensively, like, he's an incredible short roll passer. And those are the type of big men that I think can make a real impact in the playoffs, because we see these stars get incredible types of, like, just an absolute madness amount of defensive attention. Like, guys will get blitzed, guys will get trapped coming off the pin down. Dame Lillard's getting doubled at half court. You need players who are capable of making plays and acting on these advantages. Xavier Tillman is not going to create your advantages, but he will absolutely destroy a 4-on-3 on a short roll. And that matters to me. So those are two guys who like pretty much epitomize the draft smart players guy pillar for me. And that's why I love both of them.
Man, this has been a very informative podcast so far. Just I will say, like, this is sort of just sort of praise during the podcast, but you exude knowledge when you're talking about this stuff. I want to move, as Gavin said, we want to talk a little bit about some 2021 players, because what's funny is when you think about the draft, normally we'd have already been past it by 4 months now, and we'd already be talking about like these rookies getting ready to play in the NBA, but obviously because of the situation that we're in, the draft hasn't even happened yet. So it sounds kind of funny to call these like way too early projections for the 2021 draft, when if the NBA comes back for next season and tries to sort of get back on schedule and have the draft in June, we're actually like not super duper far away from the next draft. So we're not really in like way too early territory anymore. It just feels that way because we haven't had the current draft yet. But I figure I'll just start with the crown jewel and just ask your opinions on Cade Cunningham. Because I think that's a name that a lot of people hear, and he's the one with all the hype. And I mean, I know I feel like I have a grasp of what he does, but I don't know if I necessarily know him. You know what I mean? Like, I've kind of just heard him, heard the name thrown around, some skills and stuff like that, but I haven't done that much looking into him yet. And I'm sure a lot of Knicks fans and fans of any NBA team probably haven't done a ton yet either, because it's like, it feels far away, even though it's not far away, that we might be seeing him getting drafted at some point. So what are your thoughts on Cade and how he might translate to the NBA and what you've seen out of him through watching like high school film and stuff?
Yeah, so there was basically a switch that flipped internally with Cade sometime throughout his junior year. I saw him live in the beginning of his junior year. He came to DeMatha, played at Hoop Fest, and played against Paul VI. And I was very impressed because I saw this 6'6", big-bodied, strong wing making incredible drop-offs, these great reads. But I didn't go away from that game saying, oh, that's the number one pick, lock it up. By no means did I do that. And then all of a sudden, I see him 6 weeks later, a month later, and he is absolutely killing. And the usage looked a little different too. He had the ball a lot more. He was much more comfortable as the primary, and he's spoken on that. Like, I think he was a power forward in like his early, I don't know, freshman, but like definitely towards the end of middle school. So I think it was a slow transformation for him into becoming a primary ball handler. And absolutely, I would die to ask him this if I ever talked to him, but like, when did that switch flip for you? Because I'm absolutely confident that it did. And when that switch flipped, everyone was in trouble. He had just about one of the greatest EYBL seasons that you could ever think of. It was like 25-8-6 on incredible efficiency. And basically with Cade, like, people still don't understand how good he is, because this past year, Montverde, in my opinion, was the most talented high school team ever assembled. Like, they probably had 7 to 8 NBA players spanning from sophomores to seniors. And Cade is an incredibly unselfish player, sometimes to a fault, but he felt that his role on that team was to be the table setter and to be an incredible passer, to be a great teammate, to set everyone up, put them in ideal situations. And if that meant scoring 12 that night, then that meant scoring 12 that night. And that's a hard pill to swallow if people turn on a game and we're talking about this generational talent and he's scoring 12 points in a game. Fine, you can think that. The only one you're fooling is yourself, because this kid is an absolute insane talent. Like, I'm counting on the days till his first game at Oklahoma State, because I miss watching him play basketball. Like, it's that I enjoy watching him play basketball that much. He is incredibly strong. He gets to the rim at will. His touch is through the roof. Like, he'll bully you and then flip up this floater. And the most, like, he's an incredible passer. That's always been the thing. He's always been smart well beyond his years. And he's gotten so much better. Like, we talked about creating advantages at things like not just bullying people, because we saw how that worked out for people in the playoffs, but his handle's gotten tighter, his burst has gotten better, he's made athletic strides, he's just improving in every aspect. And what really, I watched the game and he was doing this, I sent out a clip, I just said the game is done, that's it. He's hitting pull-up threes now, which it's basically, if you created a player in a lab, you would create Cade Cunningham. He is a 6'7" point guard who can make every pass in the book, is an elite finisher at the rim, has made incredible mechanical and percentage-wise strides as a jump shooter, and can play as the weak side rim protector. If you don't think that guy is the number one pick by a landslide, then that's on you.
This is sort of a loaded question, but would you have him rated ahead of Luka Doncic as a prospect when they were both prospects?
So the Discord, I mean, this is how you know. So the people in draft Twitter were absolute psychos with, like, with this basketball stuff. We've gotten into multiple debates, and the question is Luka, Zion, Cade as prospects. Where do you rank them? And for me, as much as I love Zion, Zion's third, because I don't think Zion is going to be a primary, which is completely fine. But if we're talking about like Luka and Cade, who I think are going to be the two faces of the league at some point, I don't know. I would have to go Luka. It's tough because I want to see Cade's college season. If Cade is coming out and he's aggressive and he's has a high three-point volume, especially on pull-ups, he's getting to the rim, he's being aggressive and not just being like this table setter, which I think he's going to be because he's the guy. Everything's going to be revolved around him. The offense is going to go through him. He's going to have the keys. And that's why I'm extremely excited to see him at Oklahoma State. But Luka's pre-draft season, like playing in the EuroLeague, I rewatched that game during quarantine because Luka's my favorite player in the league by a wide, wide, wide margin. I absolutely love watching him play. I love everything about him. And he was like the first guy. Like, that was the first time I watched like EuroLeague, which is Luka. And I went and I rewatched that game and it was like, man, like, you have this guy. First of all, if you just think of it from like a perspective thing, it's a packed arena in Belgrade. He's playing in the biggest stage in Europe as an 18-year-old kid. And he opens up in the first few minutes of the game, he opens it up with a step back three. Like, I don't know if it's ever going to get easier as an evaluator to say home run. Like, literally home run. What else do you want? He's doing it at that stage, at that level, with that confidence. Like, everything he's showing now, he put on display in a professional league at 18 years old. I don't know if it gets easier than that, but man, I'm extremely excited to watch Cade play basketball this year.
As a closeted Suns fan, that still hurts to hear. All right, I assume once you got one more. This is last question on my end. If you could add any 2021 draft guy that's not Cade Cunningham to the Knicks, who would you pick?
If I could add any 2021 draft guy. So this is an incredible question because there is no number two prospect right now. Everyone has a different answer. People are saying BJ Boston. People are saying Jonathan Kuminga. I had Jalen Green in the mix for a minute. Those are pretty much – those are the four guys to me, but I have no order in them right now. If I were to say one, I would say Jonathan Kuminga because I think he has the best chance at being a star primary initiator. He has a long, long way to go in terms of feel and as a playmaker and as a processor before he can get there. But if we're talking about just pure skill, size, frame, and upside, Jonathan Kuminga definitely possesses the most out of that group. I like Jalen Green a lot. I like Brandon Boston a lot. They're two really, really good prospects. Still have a little bit of work to do physically. They're both really like frail in the upper body. And I worry about both of them as primaries. I don't think either of them are primaries just yet. BJ might have an argument soon, but I'd be pretty shocked if Jalen does that. But again, we talked about it. Like there's probably only 12 primary initiators in the league at a single time. So how realistic is it that you can get two stud wing primaries from the same class? Not likely, but if someone's going to do it, like 2021 is absolutely loaded, and I can't wait for these guys to start playing college hoops.
So my question is, why did three sets of parents back in like 2002 have the audacity to name three top 10 prospects all Jalen, which makes things really confusing? Jalen Green, Jalen Johnson, Jalen Suggs are all in the mix here. But I wanted to zero in on Jalen Green. He's someone that I'm intrigued by because, to your point, maybe he won't be a primary initiator, but I do think, based off everything that I've read, he's a freak athlete. Someone that could dunk on your face, but also has potential, like, three-level scoring potential. What are your thoughts on him? I guess in a more, it's, you know, we're talking, again, we are talking like way too early sort of rankings here, but what are your thoughts on him projecting into the NBA? You just mentioned the frame and all that, but just from a skill set perspective, what do you think of his game?
So compared to others in that like cover the high school stuff, I'm higher on Jalen Green. I think people are a little bit too harsh on him just in terms of, look, he has Anthony Edwards syndrome, where they can get to the rim any single time they wanted. Jalen Green could get a layup, he could get a layup or a dunk based on every single possession, and I believe that. Like, his first step, he has incredibly long strides. He is so explosive off of 2 feet. Like, he had one play in a game I was watching where it was just the easiest blow by, and then he gathered off 2 feet and literally shot up like a rocket, and it was just like, whoa. Like, he really just did that. And then throughout the course of the game, he'll take 6 contested step back threes, which, like, he can get hot at times, and that's been a significant area of improvement for him throughout his senior year. He's really made, and why I like him more than others is I recognize the skill development that he's made in the past 15 months. When we're talking last summer with Team Why Not, to be honest, and like with Team USA, I think he had a great role with Team USA. He did have to shoulder a lot of creation ability. He could run in transition. He could attack closeouts. He could hit catch and shoot jumpers, and that was ideal for him. With Team Why Not, he had an incredible run in the EYBL, but he was again surrounded with other creators like Namari Burnett, Devin Askew, which made his life a lot easier. Now with Prolific, the two biggest improvements he made at Prolific were the jump shot. It was his base is so much more compact. It's more straight up, straight down. He's getting elevation. He's a lot more comfortable. And combine that with the handle improvements that he's made. His handle was really high during the summer. When he would be driving downhill, he would get plucked, stripped. The ball was a little bit loose. And he's a slasher. So a slasher with a high handle and a slender frame isn't exactly ideal. But he made great strides as a ball handler, not just in terms of creating space, but keeping the ball tight, keeping it close to him when he's driving, and then fully extending at the rim. I'm not fully comfortable with him as a primary, but I think he's someone who could be an absolute offensive weapon at his peak.
All right, I was going to finish up, Jake, but I just thought of a final question. If you were going to take the 2021 draft class and the 2020 draft class and put them in one pool, is LaMelo Ball the only 2020 guy who would be in the top 10?
So I've tried to do this multiple times. I think let me pull up my 2021 board.
I love that I'm asking you these like insane off the wall questions, and you're like, I've thought about this quite a bit. Let me tell you.
You have no idea how many times you have no idea how many times I've tried to put a composite board together. Right. So like, I'm gonna say LaMelo would be in there, LaMelo would be in there, Anthony Edwards would be in there, and Killian Hayes would be in there.
Okay.
There was three. I'm comfortable with – and then the seven I would have in from 2021, I would have Cade Cunningham, Jonathan Kuminga, Jalen Green, B.J. Boston, Jalen Johnson, Caleb Love, and Keon Johnson.
All right. That's a great note to wrap up on. Jake, you gave us a ton of your time. It's your freshman year of college, so I know you have much better things to be doing. So I really, really appreciate it. Can you tell people, I know you mentioned a little bit at the beginning of the podcast, but your handle on Twitter, where they can find you, and then where they can find all your work.
You can find all my work at jakeinthepaint.com. I've been writing draft pieces on the 2020 guys throughout the season and all throughout quarantine. I just threw up a piece before I went to school on some of my favorite guys in the 2021 class, an early look. I went super in-depth on four guys. I talked about Caleb Love, Keon Johnson, DJ Stewart, and Moses Moody, four of my favorite prospects in that class at the moment. Obviously, things are very subject to change, but based on high school film and AAU film, those are four of my guys. I broke them down, and then the playoff pillars scouting philosophy piece that we've been talking about this whole time. It's pinned to my Twitter profile at Jake in the Paint, and you go on my website, you'll see it there too. I want to thank you guys for having me. This was a ton of fun. It's been a minute since I could like have a real basketball conversation with people. My roommates and my boys at college aren't exactly qualified, and they kind of drive me crazy with the takes they have. So to have an educated basketball conversation, I'll give you all the time in the world. So thank you guys for having me. I had a ton of fun.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on, man. This is a blast.